morning. You're tuned into Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local, brought to you as always via BFF.fm. This week, we're taking a break from the tough legislative issues facing our neighborhood at the moment and dive instead into the world of theater. Though many have long lamented the demise of the local arts scene and many artists have been pushed out, there are still a few great theaters holding on in the neighborhood, producing wonderful work. Two theater folks are with us in the studio today to talk about their recent work and San Francisco theater in general. Giovanni Adams is rehearsing right now for a show called Hooded, or Being Black for Dummies, which will appear at the Bay Area Playwrights Festival. He has also appeared in America with Critical Mass Performance Group and The Recommendation at IAMA Theater Company. You might also have caught him on TV, since he's been in Fatal Instinct, Criminal Minds, and Grey's Anatomy, just to name a few. Hi, Giovanni.
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm doing great.
Good. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Becca Wolf, we know as the director of Hookman locally. It's a dark and still comedic show recently at Z Below, but she's also a director and a teacher at many other theater institutions and projects. Those include Cal Poly Pomona, Pixar, IAMA Theater Company, and many others. She's also co-founded Tilted Field Productions, which is a collective of theater artists from all over the country, including New York, San Francisco, and LA. Becca, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm so glad you could make it. So you're both artists with roots in more than one big theater city. What stands out about the respective theater scenes in the cities that you've worked in?
Great question.
If anything. I assume there must be something.
Definitely. Well, Tilted Field is, we started because we all met in school back east. And then went our respective ways after we got our degrees and ended up in different cities. And one of our big parts of our mission is to try to create a conversation nationally between these different scenes, because it seems like each of these cities that we happen to be in, which are LA, San Francisco, and New York, are totally different in terms of theater. And I think one of the biggest things is audience. Like the way that the audience receives work and what people seem to want to see in the different cities. And in New York, it's like, you know, people are steeped in theater. So there's this constant conversation happening about, you know, what is your comment on whose comment on, you know, a classic play or whatever it is, that it feels like there's a kind of like a generational, like generation after generation of artists that are talking to each other. That's really different from LA, which is the Wild West. You kind of get to do whatever you want there. Whether or not you're going to find an audience is another question, but that's where Gio and I met. And the kind of theater that we were doing down there with IAMA was very story-driven. You know, it's a place where people are thinking, you know, because of television and film, so much about like hardcore narrative structure and things like that. As a director, it's harder to find a kind of experimental audience there.
Mm-hmm. What about here?
Oh, San Francisco is big. And I mean, people are so open to different ideas and different approaches to work. And as a director, it's a really exciting town to be in because there's such a diversity of interests. You know, people are just like from the shows that the two of us were doing in the last couple of months. Hookman was this like crazy dark comedy experiment with language, and then Mount Misery.
What's
Mount
Misery?
Mount Misery about?
Oh yes, I just finished. Andrew Saito's world premiere of Mount Misery at the Cutting Ball Theater, which is in the Tenderloin. And they are known for reimagining like classical works and giving emerging playwrights sort of a platform to experiment. And in this world, Mount Misery is an actual a site. Donald Rumsfeld purchased this plot of land as a vacation home in 2004. Unbeknownst to him, it was formerly the plantation that housed Frederick Douglass.
Ooh.
And so reading this story in The Economist, Andrew Saito imagines this world where Frederick Douglass and Donald Rumsfeld sort of collide through time and space without really any explanation. And they learn from one another to sort of tragic and devastating ends. But that type of work, I feel like, requires a certain level of rigor, I think, as an audience who's coming to not only see themselves on stage, you know, through the relationship between the various characters, but to wrestle with like bigger ideas. And it seems like here in San Francisco, people are up for that challenge. They're not only wanting to be entertained, but sort of informed and sort of given a space to sort of bring everything in context of their own experience, these larger things that are happening around the world. So
interesting. That also requires an audience that knows what the heck is going on, right?
I know, right? You know, it's just like some of my friends from LA came up and they were like, well, you know, I don't really know about Rumsfeld, but you know, halfway through the play I kind of got what was going on.
Well, in that sense it was educational then.
Yeah.
That's also good. Yeah, that's interesting. So in San Francisco you find that people are receptive to this sort of more political, like maybe difficult kind of work?
Yeah, I think in LA, it's not that people aren't receptive. I think LA is such a hustle town. You know, it's almost like there's this lack of resource, you know? I mean, it's sort of like not real, because obviously if you want to work, there are people out there, you know, who are perhaps doing the type of work that you want to engage in. But, you know, I just read this wonderful piece from LA Magazine that said after the Great Recession, you know, a lot of the philanthropic support of like the arts in Los Angeles sort of like began to wane. And so even the underground theater scene, they were having trouble finding like an audience, you know, for different plays. And so there's not that much room for experimentation because, you know, people having trouble even, you know, paying for the rent, you know, keeping their doors open. And so,
that's, you know, funny. That sounds familiar somehow.
I know, right?
So what is it about San Francisco that keeps that alive, that keeps this kind of experimental theater going?
It's a city of dreams, man. You know, it's just like people come there and they have these big dreams, and there's so many different people in the arts, you know, from young directors and playwrights and to musicians and dancers, you know, all sort of like wanting to find their place in the larger cog of the big machine, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in San Francisco, because that's not the focus, that people have a little bit more space to, you know, intellectually, creatively to play. There's less of a sense of like the hustle. There's less of a sense of I need to get out there. I need to get my work seen by these five people, and you know, not and that can be a great motivator in LA, but it also can be can create these weird fads rather than, you know, of a show. Like a friend of mine did this. It's a great show. It's called The Day She'll Declare It. It was in LA, site specific. And it was something that just blew up. And it was like, I mean, they got all this coverage in the LA Times and it was great and amazing. And then when they closed, it was like,
nothing.
There's just no, you can't like pick up momentum that way. It's not that it's like, and then you talk to other artists and you have collaborations that are, you know, supported. You kind of have to, every time you have a new idea, you have to hustle it into being. And San Francisco has a pretty amazing infrastructure, arts infrastructure that LA I think is starting to create, but it's just, it's not, that's not the focus there, you know. There's a different art scene there that has much more
and
to
it's
do
so
with film.
So still large. I mean, yeah, like San Francisco, what, 7 by 7 miles?
Yeah, yeah.
And LA, this is like huge sprawl with like millions of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, on average, it takes, you know, an hour to get anywhere
in
Los Angeles. You know, whereas like being out here, you know, I stepped into rehearsals for Mount Misery a couple months back. And while I was waiting, you know, to get my show off the ground, you know, I was just, the doors were wide open to this theatrical world. I mean, I saw like 5 shows within just a couple weeks here and met some really cool people, you know, largely thanks to Becca. You know, that type of, you know, where theaters are in conversation with each other is much harder, you know, when, you know, everyone's trying to brave the 405 traffic.
Right.
Yeah. What's interesting that when you say infrastructure, that in some ways can also just mean actual land, like the roads, the transit.
Right.
But I'm curious what else you mean by infrastructure that supports the arts and, you know, hope, maybe give us an idea of what we have to maintain to keep this here.
Yeah. I mean, I think places in the Mission specifically, places like Z-Space, I mean, Z-Space is an incredible meeting place for so many artists, and the fact that it's housed in the Artaud building, I mean, it's like keeping that alive, I think, is huge. And so, I mean, Artaud has historically, how long have they been there, maybe?
Gosh, I don't know.
40,
I
want to
say
years?
Since the 80s?
Yeah.
The 80s?
So 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, this is a building full of artists who are living and working on site. And then within that building, it's a full city block. And within that building, there's like 4 or 5 theater spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe Good is there. No Space has their own company that does Theater Jugend, which does amazing Japanese theater. And then Z-Space itself, Lisa Steinler, who's the artistic director, is so ambitious for that space and bringing national level work there that I think a lot of people don't even know is there. So going out and checking out what they're doing is a huge way to support. Hookman, it was really interesting because we ended up having a great response eventually, but trying to kind of get people aware of what's happening was kind of hard, and it was surprising because it's a very high energy, really fun, really accessible show that also I think has some weight, and I think that's a lot of the work that Z-Space does. And so, you know, just going to your local theater, especially a place like Z-Space where they're going to start offering more kind of weekly programming, salons and nights where they're going to have bands and readings, and supporting that with your, you know, feet as well as, you know, of course, dollars.
Your money.
Great, but,
yes.
But I think that that's a big part of it, and engaging the younger, you know, the younger philanthropists.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're somebody who's thinking about, you know, what's going to be my mark on the world, thinking about the arts and thinking about if that's something you're passionate about, find some artists you believe in and find out how you can change their lives. You
mm-hmm.
know, I think that's a really big, big part of what is
yes, you
alive.
Young techies out there.
Yes.
We are talking to you.
Targeting anyone specific, are we? Yeah, I mean, that is something that I talked to Lisa a while ago, and that was sort of something we were thinking about is, you know, like if people want theater to stay around, you got to go see it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are you waiting for the time when San Francisco no longer supports these kind of art spaces? Or do you, you know, are you sure that you want this here? And if you want this here, you must go out and show that support
in
some tangible way.
And enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think people sometimes are surprised by how much exists and how good it really is.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this isn't just amateur hour. Like, this is some real stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it was really like the town is ripe for that because it doesn't seem like a movie town.
Hmm.
You know, when I first came here, I was just shocked. I hadn't seen one Hollywood blockbuster billboard like posted up, and it was quite unusual coming from LA, where it's like so in your face. The entertainment industry is like always this like present, almost like Big Brother type, you know, presence in the town.
Big faces looking down at you.
Yeah,
all the time.
But it was nice. Like you go in and like you're actually interacting with people. And what was really cool about, you know, our show at Cutting Ball is, you know, here you have enhanced interrogation techniques being, you know, held up with like, you know, slavery in context of what's happening around the city, you know, with Baltimore and, you know, some of the riots that are happening around the country, Black Lives Matter movement, and people would linger like in, you know, the lobby and just talk about, you know, what does this mean when outside in the Tenderloin you see people, you know, on the streets, you mm-hmm. know, struggling with drug addiction and abuse. So I think, you know, it's such a town where, like, you can see some theater and sort of, like, be given a space to sort of, like, talk to people and have actual human interaction.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I got the sense from Lisa, I don't know if this is an exact quote, but I think she said something along the lines of, you know, the best political theater is the one where you don't know it's political theater, but then you find yourself suddenly engaged in these conversations afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, how did that happen? Yeah. How do you make a show have an impact like that? How do you make it cohesive and entertaining while preserving that meaning? I mean, you're a director, right? You sort of have a hand in that.
Yeah. Well, right now, Gio and I are working on a show he's been writing called Love is a Dirty Word. And you want to talk a little bit about Love is a Dirty Word? Talk about it.
Yeah, you do.
Now that I've been put on the spot. I started writing this piece after watching some one-man shows. And it started out with me with this cute idea of, like, oh, what did I think about love when I was a young boy? You know, it was very much so like romantic love. It's sort of like a cabaret piece where I'm giving my thoughts on love and dialogue with these songs. And as the piece progressed and it became, you know, me delving into more kind of dark, you know, area of my experience, you know, with, you know, divorce and abuse, you know, then it became, it's like, how does a man, you know, a black man in a culture where, you know, we have to be told Black Lives Matter, like, learn to love himself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think until you are right with yourself, you can't really truly, you know, be right, you know, with your brother or your sister. And so, you know, I shared this with Becca and she actually thought this might be something that people would want to go and see.
You say that like so incredulously. You were surprised by this idea?
I don't know. You start out thinking, how can my experience, you know, which is so specific, speak to a larger audience of people, perhaps, you know, who, you know, don't share, you know, like my experiences growing up in the South, and what sort of meaning can they, you know, take away from it? And Becca was hugely encouraging and sharing how, like, the very specific individual experience can speak to a larger audience. It then becomes universal because it's so rooted in something real and something so human. And I think that was the encouragement that I needed to sort of, you know, make it more than, you know, my own little dark room project.
So how do you turn that into a show, Becca?
Well, it's, I mean, the script that Gio's written is a combination of a concert, kind of jam session with a band, and some beautiful poetry that he's written, and a monologue. And so thinking about, I mean, it's pretty easy from my end, because it's already a very strong script. So it's really a matter of finding the, like, I think that theater works like music, or the best theater works like music, in that there's a sense of the way that repetition works in theater, and the way that themes develop in language, or also in, you know, the sound of the music that Gio's chosen, and how we get from a place where it's a story about a kid thinking about love to being a story about a man considering what love is and why love is a dirty word. That there's a kind of development, you have to develop those themes in such a way that a person goes from thinking about love, oh cute, to love complicated, to love, oh God, this is something else than I began with tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of, the same way that a great piece of music develops over its course, you know, through its movements, I think the same thing with theater. It's about finding out what's going to take the audience on, like, you know, what's going to get their heart and take them past the place that they expected to go tonight. So, I mean, the actual process is that we're working with the script, and Gio's going to do a reading of it later this month, and we'll structure it from there. Mm-hmm. And then I think San Francisco is a great town to begin that work, because then it's really just about Gio getting in front of people, which he's just looking so excited about right now. But, you know, and for us to see, what does the audience respond to?
Yeah. Well, so we've talked a lot about the art, the audience and the kind of the infrastructure, but what about you guys? I mean, you were talking about how LA is really expensive. I just mentioned how San Francisco is really expensive, and like, theater is not known for paying anybody enormous salaries. How do you make it in the theater world? I mean, how do you survive? These are hard times.
Do you know what's funny? It's like, and without being, you know, too, you know, full disclosure, like, since I've been here in the city, there's been just a wave of support, you know, be it artistically from, you know, like-minded people like Becca, to actual, like, you know, like, I guess, philanthropist? Like, I mean...
Patrons of the arts. Yeah,
the philanthropists we were calling out to earlier. Yeah.
I mean, like, there have been people who've been, who've opened their homes and, you know, have welcomed me and felt it their responsibility in some way to encourage the work, you know, that I'm doing, which is incredibly humbling. And also, I'm taken aback by it because, you know, it kind of seems like something that you read about, like in the Harlem Renaissance or something like that, you know, not like in real life. And yet, like, there are people there, you know, there are these people in San Francisco, like, who want to feel a part of something that's more meaningful, even if they're not the person who's actually doing the work themselves.
Well, that's heartening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, my work is both directing and teaching. So directing, there are many more sort of mid-sized theaters here that actually do pay their artists, and I think that that's, it's certainly not a princely sum, but, you know, having been in this field for a long time and spent a lot of time sort of trying to understand how to make a life in it. San Francisco seems like there are people both who are patrons of the arts from a more layman's perspective, someone who really feels like a civic perspective, wanting to see that the arts thrive. Mm-hmm. And then within the arts community, I've just found so much support from people like Lisa and from Michael Butler, who's at Center Repertory out in Walnut Creek, which he has a very populist mission. You know, it's not, he's definitely not doing a lot of experimental theater, but it's a place that he really loves his audience, understands his audience, and, you know, supports me as an artist to take on larger shows. Mm-hmm. And then I'm teaching right now at Berkeley City College in the Multimedia Arts Department, which is an amazing place if anybody's looking to get into some film. Rachel Simpson, who runs that program, is outstanding, and she's been very supportive. And then I teach these workshops at Pixar. Pixar has these educational workshops for their staff and anyone there, their artists or, you know, someone in operations or security or whoever can take these workshops, and I teach writing workshops there. So it's been I just have found a lot of opportunity here. And more than any other place that I've been, to do the kind of work that I want to do and to apply the skills that I feel like I've gained, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. Although, you know, maybe a little bit sad that the only way to get by seems to be to, you know, get support from the community and help from other people, that the art itself, I mean, shouldn't that be enough?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I think theater is a live art and intimately connected with the community. And the more you need the community, the more the community knows it needs to be a part of it. And that's something that, I don't know, I think, you know, the fact that we talked so much about the audience, mm-hmm. I think that's so good. I think that it really is so easy to feel like we're so important and we're having important ideas. Keep out. You know, and I think that that's, you know, that just doesn't make good theater. And I think that being intimately connected more and more, as much as possible, to be connected to the community, it's great. I'm all for commercial theater. I mean, I think it's great when people want to go out and see a show and pay a lot of money to see it, but it's an expensive proposition to put on a show. Yes. So you have to be wanting to pay, you know, 50, 100, 150 bucks to see a show before it's really going to be making money for people. So,
so in a sense, this approach or that this way of kind of sustaining oneself is more accessible to more of a wider variety of people who might be interested in theater.
Yeah. And I mean, not to say that it's easy, but I think that, you know, that it's definitely, I think it's, and it's soulfully right, I think.
Well, we're about to run out of time in this show. At the end of the show, we always do a part called Neighborhood Notes. Usually when it's all reporters, each of us offers something that they saw that's interesting in the neighborhood. So pop quiz, what's going on in the Mission, you guys?
BFF.fm.
Oh, yeah.
This studio is so cool. We walked in and we were like,
what? It's like a rainforest in a building.
There's a tire swing. Yes. And there's a stage which Gio jumped right onto.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I ran for it.
And it's so cool. And I'm like, what? I want to spend much more time here at
Well, let's see
BFF
if we can make that happen. Please. All right. Well, my neighborhood note, since we are talking about theater, is that Eliana Lopez, who we actually had on the show, is doing a second run of her one-woman show about the scandal that ensued after accusations that her husband, San Francisco Sheriff Ross McRaimi, had hit her. You can catch that this weekend only for its second run, July 9th to 11th, at the Mission Center for Latino Arts, the MCCLA. And I don't know what the ticket prices are, but you should definitely check out the MCCLA. I neglected to look that up. But I think that just about brings us to the end of our show. You've been tuned in to Listen Local, brought to you as always by the staff of Mission Local. If you know something that we don't that you think we should, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com. And after us, check out some electronic tunes and more from across the pond, brought to you by John Digital. Thanks for listening.